Welcome to ID the Future. I'm Andrew McDermott. We hear over and over that evolution can accomplish anything through small, incremental steps using mutation and natural selection. But how realistic is this, really? In a new paper in Biocomplexity, Dr. Douglas Axe and Dr. Anne Gager put this to the test. I'm here today with Dr. Gager, who will help us understand this new research and what it means. And it's actually the culmination of many years of research, which she will explain. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Gager.
My pleasure.
So, if I may, Anne, what was your model system for asking this question about evolution?
We actually used two model systems. One, a computational model using computers called Stylus, and the other, in the lab model where we tested real proteins. Let me tell you a little bit about Stylus because I think it's really cool. Proteins have a particular fold to them that gives them their function. Now, by fold, I mean its three-dimensional structure. You can imagine it this way. Take a very long pipe cleaner and fold it into different shapes. You can make curlicues by wrapping around your finger. You can make sheets by folding it back and forth in a plane. Now take all those different shapes and combine them into one three-dimensional shape, fold it up. You can do this thousands of times and have thousands of distinct shapes. Now, proteins are like that. They have thousands of distinct shapes to them, and their shapes determine what they're capable of doing, what their function is. Now, how does this relate to a computer model? Well, we needed something that had a relationship where you start with a single string, like that pipe cleaner, and you go to a three-dimensional shape that has a particular function, like the protein, but something that could be worked with in the computer world. And it occurred to Doug that there's a certain parallel with language. You can have a string of characters that are like the code in the DNA that convey function, the meaning behind that string of characters. But what was missing was the three-dimensional shape. Instead of having language be a string of characters, you need something that has a shape to it that conveys meaning. And he had the brilliant idea that if you used Han characters, Chinese characters, the pictograms that are drawn that have a particular meaning, they have a lot of parallels with protein structure. So using Han characters as the shape that has meaning, that has function, he created a program where he could write a code that would allow the computer to draw the three-dimensional shape, like an enzyme folds itself, and then score the Han character that was drawn for its resemblance to the target archetypal character. So it's a brilliant model system. You can emulate the DNA system. You start with a DNA code, you draw the character, and then you ask, how similar is it? Does it have meaning to the target? And using that system, you can mutate the DNA string and then see what shapes result.
Okay. So then it sounds like Stylus helped you with this research. How does it account for time as it relates to evolution?
Good question. The reason why lots of people have developed computer models for evolution is because they recognize that in silico, in a computer environment, you can test trillions of different examples very rapidly. You don't have to wait millions of years to see if the evolution can work. Whereas in the lab, you would have to wait millions of years and you'd have to have whole buildings full of bacterial soup. It just isn't realistic.
Okay. So Stylus really helped make this research possible then.
Right.
So what did you find that you report in this new paper?
We found that if you start with a character that's nothing but junk, a scribble on the page, basically, and you ask, can we evolve it to look like a particular Han character, taking that scribble and putting it through rounds of mutation and selection, many rounds and many different test cases, you find that you can't ever evolve it to be more than just a little bit better than it started out. It gets stuck on a plateau and never goes anywhere, never improves to look anything like the Han character you're aiming for. Now, if you start with a character that is different from the target that you're trying to reach, but it has some of the same basic characteristics, the same number of strokes, for example, and you ask, can we evolve this character to look like that different character by taking it through multiple rounds? This would be analogous to asking, can we start with one protein fold and convert it to perform the function of a different protein fold? The answer is, once again, you can improve it slightly to look more like the other fold, the other character, but you get stuck at a level where you're only 2 to 3 to 4 orders of magnitude better, when the wild type enzyme is 7, 8, 16 orders of magnitude more than that.
Wow.
So the last example, if you start with the character that is the same as what you're trying to get to, but it's been mutated 6 times, for example, so that it now looks like a badly drawn version of the character, can you improve it to look like the character you're aiming for? And the answer is yes. Badly drawn characters can improve to look like the archetype they're aiming for without any trouble. Now, what does this have to do with protein evolution? I suppose you're wondering.
Yeah.
Well, you can do the same experiments in the lab, but this time you use an enzyme as your starting point. Enzymes have 3-dimensional folds to them, and what fold they have determines their function. In the Han world, their meaning. We started with an enzyme which is involved in breaking down the antibiotic penicillin. It's what gives bacteria resistance to the antibiotic. Now, there are many different ways to have resistance to antibiotics. Some ways of doing it are easy. We know that bacteria can evolve resistance to antibiotics very simply by breaking something that the antibiotic attacks. So, penicillin affects the bacterial cell wall. It breaks a bond in the cell wall and causes the bacterium to rupture. You can generate antibiotic resistance by changing that bond so that the enzyme no longer recognizes it, or by removing that bond. That would be fast. 1 or 2 mutations is something bacteria accomplish readily. So you mutate, and then you select for the ability to survive the antibiotic, you're there. Now, the enzyme we start with is more complex than that, and it conveys resistance by an enzymatic activity. It has to break down the penicillin to provide resistance. So it has a particular fold to it that allows it to carry out this function. So we wanted to ask the question, all right, if we start with a junk version of that enzyme, one that's completely collapsed and like a scribble on the page, can it be improved to be able to carry out the wild-type level of function in degrading penicillin? Like the example in Stylus, where we started with a scribble on the page and we wanted to ask, could it get to a Han character? When you start with a junk protein, you can't improve it to wild-type levels. It never really improves any at all. So that's like the Stylus result. The scribble never got better.
Huh.
Then we ask the question, well, what if you take the enzyme and mutate it a bunch so that it's like the Han character that was mutated and looked like it was badly drawn? Can you take that enzyme, the badly drawn enzyme, if you will, and improve it to look like the fully functional enzyme? And does its activity improve? The answer is yes. You can rapidly improve that enzyme to wild-type levels, even though it's badly beaten up by mutation. Our take-home lesson from this is, unless you're already designed to carry out a function, already capable of performing that function to some degree, and your structure is in place, you can't improve. If you have a Han character that's just a little bit distorted, badly drawn, you can improve it. If you have an enzyme that's destabilized by mutation, you can improve it. But if you start with the wrong fold or the wrong character or a piece of junk, you can't do anything about it.
Huh. Very intriguing findings. Well, let me ask you, how does this compare to other research on the topic?
It's an important question. I'm glad you asked it. Lots of scientists have published papers in which they say that they've been able to move an enzyme to a new function. So they're making claims that you start with a low level of activity, like our junk enzyme or our scribble on the page, or perhaps like the Rung Han character or we tested in other cases where you start with a completely different protein fold and ask, can you make a new one? They've done these experiments and they've managed to improve this weak function to some degree, 2 to 3 to 4 orders of magnitude. So that's 10,000 fold, say. But then they reach a plateau and they can't improve anymore, no matter how much they mutate. They never make it even close to wild type function. Our answer to them would be, well, it's because you're starting with the wrong design. The protein you're starting with is not designed to carry out the function you're aiming for. It is the result of a side reaction from an enzyme with a different fold, a different design. And you can't push that fold to a new design. So I would suggest that these researchers demonstrate that they can improve their starting enzyme levels to wild-type levels. So far, none of the papers I've read have been able to do that. They've come 2 to 3 to 4 orders of magnitude close to wild-type, but nobody's ever made it to wild-type from an enzyme that has a different design than their target. So I'd invite other researchers to try the experiments like we have done with different enzymes. Take a junk enzyme, take a badly destabilized enzyme, take a enzyme with a different fold, and see if they can improve it to a target function. And my prediction is that if they start with an enzyme that already has the design, the fold design of the target, they might be able to improve it, depending on how close they are to the target function. 33 mutations away with many, many, many trials, you can do it. As long as there's selectable level of activity at each step, you can do it. If you start with a Han characters that's the same as what you're going for, but destabilized, drawn badly, you can do it. If you start with junk, you don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Now, the take-home message for evolution is that mutation and natural selection have limits, and they can't innovate anything unless the function they're innovating is already present. That's a radical statement for an evolutionary biologist. You already have to have the designed feature there in order to get it to improve. So you can't improve a pigment cell to an eye unless you already have something like an eye there with all of its structures. You can improve maybe the acuity of the eye, but you won't get it from a starting point that has just a very low level of activity. That's a broad extrapolation on my part, but I think it's a true statement.
Yeah. Well, this is very exciting and a very important argument for intelligent design. My only hope, and I'm sure it is yours, is that other researchers can acknowledge the limits to natural selection acting on mutations and just be more truthful about what evolution can and can't do.
Well, I think they have to recognize the limits themselves. It's not enough to say you've improved an enzyme 3 or 4 orders of magnitude if the wild-type enzyme is much, much, much more efficient than that. We have to be able to account for the wild-type function. We have to be able to account for the structures we see here in order to accept evolution as the answer. If evolution can't explain these small steps in proteins, it's not going to be able to explain the large steps that are required to get a functional organism.
Where can listeners go to read the full paper?
The paper's published at Biocomplexity, which is an online journal. The website is bio-complexity.org. And in the paper itself, they can find information about Stylus. There's actually an online version of Stylus that's available for people to do their own experiments. They can duplicate what we did. They can use their own Han characters. They can try different parameters. It's all possible.
Wow. And that's what's exciting about science at the end of the day. We do want you to try this at home or in the lab, wherever you may be.
Right. High school students could use Stylus.
There you go. That's awesome. Well, Dr. Gager, thank you for dropping by and explaining all this in layperson's terms. It really helps.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
I'm Andrew McDermott for ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is Copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.